Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. It's all about the rock and roll today. Classic Album Clash returns with an amazing battle between two 80s Aerosmith classics, Permanent Vacation and Pump. And I got the guys from Pot of Thunder returning to help determine which Aerosmith album comes out on top. The Garlic Dragon, Nick, your buddy Andy, America's little brother, and of course the mysterious breakout star of the podcast realm, Chris L., are back to do the usual album cover comparisons, analyze the production and songwriting, and of course take part in the infamous song by song breakdown. And like with all the classic album clashes, we've got some great stories and trivia to share, and a lot of ridiculousness that may or may not involve Macaulay Culkin, actor and comedian Tyler Perry, the Harold and Kumar movies, classic 80s mixtape, and a couple of broken hearts. One of them may or may not have been mine. So let's get to the classic album clash Aerosmith edition right now on Talk is Jericho.
All right, so every time I come to Chicago, one of my favorite things to do is hang out with the fine gents from Pot of Thunder, Nick, Andy, and the illustrious and mysterious Chris L. And I usually do their show, which is called Pot of Thunder, and I figured it was time for them to stop being so selfish and bring it on back over here to Talk is Jericho. They were here last time when we did Kiss Alive versus Kiss Alive 2, which was a very monumental show. And we're going to continue doing the classic album clash with Aerosmith.
Yes, thanks for having us back.
No, how did this come up with the Aerosmith again? What are we doing?
We're huge fans.
Well, originally we were supposed to have Charlie from Anthrax join us.
Yep.
And we said, what's your favorite bands? And he listed like Depeche Mode and The Cure and Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith. And I was like, oh. And then we were thinking, what Aerosmith song should we do? Mm-hmm. And then we came up with doing like an 80s one, and I pitched it to him, and he's like, I don't really know 80s Aerosmith. So.
Yeah, and you gave him a migraine with that.
He ran screaming. So,
Nat, any normal person would have assumed it would be Toys versus Rocks.
But it's not how we rolled it.
No. Why do the obvious?
Right. And we were always into the 80s versions of bands, and Aerosmith is one of those bands, much like Kiss. Mm-hmm. ZZ Top, Van Halen, that kind of reinvented themselves for the time and, dare I say, became way bigger in the 80s than they ever were in the 70s?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's accurate.
Yeah. That's when they crossed over to pop, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of like the, I guess you'd say real hair metal,
that's,
right?
Yeah.
Kind of that glammy, the Desmond Child. We all know Desmond from the stuff he did with Kiss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But I think when we do these shows, we talk about when did you first hear this record, hear this band, and I'll start because I remember you hearing about Aerosmith, and I had one video that was from when Joe Perry had left.
It was called Lightning Strikes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Aerosmith with two other guitar players. Yeah. So I was never really into Aerosmith. And then, of course, when you started hearing, I think it was Dude Looks Like a Lady was the first one. And then realized that, because the radio stations gave him a big push at the time frame. And that's kind of when I got into Aerosmith from this era on. How about you, Nick?
I definitely got into them this era on. I actually brought along, even though we can't play it on anything, my original cassette
yeah.
from I had back this then. Too. And unfortunately, I dropped it because on the jewel case, it had Aerosmith logo in yellow.
What printed on the plastic.
Printed on the actual jewel case. And I dropped it like the first day I had
it. Oh, so this is a different...
No, this is it's a different jewel case, right. Unfortunately. So I'm still mourning the loss.
It's so weird holding a cassette in right. my hand. Like, I used to have all cassettes.
Right.
And it just seems so like... a relic from the past. Mm-hmm, you know, yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all whatsoever.
And also MTV, big MTV kid growing up. Dude mm-hmm. Looks Like a Lady.
Huge.
Huge. Wanted to mimic it on stage for the talent show in second grade.
Nice.
My older brother Jay, who's behind me right now, talked me out of it because of all the references to do me all night. Figured it wasn't a good idea.
It's a rare moment of responsibility from Jay, our brother.
Is Jay the oldest?
Yes.
So we have a triple dose of Jones Brothers bullshit today.
Yes. You do.
Chris L. is happy that I'm here to help you cut through the shit.
The Chris's versus the Jones.
That's right. You're going to need another Chris.
Well, as we established the last time we did this, that you're actually my brother.
Pretty much. Oh, yeah,
stepbrother, right. maybe.
Yeah, we're trying to...
Illegitimate brother.
Right. Matt, get that DNA lineage proven so I can start tapping into that income stream.
I mean, the resemblance is uncanny, so...
Yeah, it is.
If you guys didn't hear the one we did on Pot of Thunder for, was it Billy Squire?
Yeah, Rock Me Tonight.
Rock Me Tonight, and that was Ted Irvin's debut in Pot of Thunder. Never had seen Billy Squire, heard of him, and it was just one of the best shows. So funny.
It was an awesome one.
Great times.
Yeah.
How about you, Chris?
Well, growing up in Detroit in the 70s, obviously Aerosmith was constantly on album-oriented rock radio, all the stations. So, I mean, I definitely got my fill of them on the radio, which is why I didn't really own too many of their albums. I could hear their music whenever I wanted on the radio. Interestingly enough, the two... Aerosmith albums, the only two I've ever owned, are Rock and a Hard Place, thanks mainly to Lightning Strikes.
Right.
I still say that's the toughest riff they've ever put
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
Yeah, I had no idea, seeing the video, that that wasn't the real Aerosmith.
I didn't care. Either.
Right.
That's such an ass-kicking song.
Yeah.
It's so great. And then Permanent Vacation, because I, too, was drawn in by Dude Looks Like a Lady. Mm. Great tune, and... they were clearly invigorated from the Run DMC.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because the Run DMC.
That's what really put them back on the map.
Because they reunited about 85.
The Dunmouth Mirrors.
Dunmouth Mirrors. Yep. And then they did the Run DMC thing, which put them on the map.
Yeah, and then they took that ball and ran with it. So, right, so those are the only two Aerosmith albums I've ever owned. But, you know, definitely appreciate them as the American Stones, as their...
And I'm the same. The only Aerosmith ones I own are this era. Permanent Vacation, Pump, Get a Grip, and the next one, which wasn't very good. It was called Joy.
Just Push Play?
Push Play, yeah. How about you, Andy?
Well, tagging on to Nick's story, because Nick's my older brother. He's 3 years older. Got into Aerosmith from watching MTV, just like pretty much everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like Aerosmith as much as Nick. So once he got the tapes, I would kind of like wander out of the room when he put them on. So I think I liked a couple of the videos, but like whole cassette, you know, the whole album, I was like, not into it.
Well, they really embraced the video side of things too.
Yeah.
And I would have to say, knowing what I know about Aerosmith now, that was probably all Steven Tyler. Mm-hmm. He was very much the control freak of the band. He has, from what I hear, an actual mic that the techs can hear during live shows saying, turn the bass down, turn the lights up, do this, do that, hit the cymbal over here.
Really?
He very much runs the show in that respect.
Hmm.
And on the videos topic there, I remember seeing something years and years ago on MTV where they had these great videos, they were in constant rotation, but I remember seeing an interview where Steven Tyler was kind of lamenting the fact that they even had to do them at this point in time, because, you know, back in the day when they started, that wasn't part of the business.
Right.
But he was explaining it as, when you hear a song, you should kind of have your own mental image of what's going on there. You should kind of develop that. That's your responsibility, and now we have to do it for you.
But then he got the chance to jam his tongue down a woman's throat in the Ragdoll video, and then have those two bikini chicks doing their thing and loving an elevator. Right. Suddenly, your own mental picture out the window. Nobody cares about that. This is what we want to see, because this is what we want to do.
It wasn't going to be that. I mean,
it wasn't going to be that.
Because you remember, we keep talking about Lightning Strikes. You remember the video for that? Yeah. They're like in a 50s street gang. No chicks in that one. So he's probably like, I hate this.
A reenactment of the Lords of Flatbush is not what I want to see. Especially when something like Hot Girls in Love is coming next. Right. It's like, that video's better than Lightning
Strikes. Yes, they really figured it out. Because once again, too, you talk about Aerosmith, they're like Cheap Trick. Two good-looking guys, and, well, in this case, three kind of nondescript, borderline ugly guys.
Yeah.
So it's all based around, you know, the Mick and Keith of the band, which, of course, is Joe Perry and Steven. Did you guys go to any Aerosmith gigs around this time frame?
Not me.
Not this time frame. The one time I saw them, before we started rolling, we were discussing, like, some of their opening acts.
Yeah.
Must have been 97 or 98 when I saw them. Mm. So I guess after this era that we're discussing specifically on this episode. But one of the main draws for me was the opening act, which was Monster Magnet.
Mm.
That Aerosmith crowd did not know what to make of those guys, man. They're, you know, second coming of the, like a space rock Stooges. I mean, Aerosmith crowd coming to hear Crying and all that stuff, they didn't know what the hell.
And when I saw was a great mix. It was Skid Row, and like I said, I think it might have been Bon Jovi. I could be wrong about that. It wasn't Bon Jovi, but like Skid Row and Aerosmith, that's a great bill.
Sure, yeah.
That fits perfectly, you know. It was probably something lame like White Lion and Aerosmith in 87.
Yeah.
White Lion had every tour in Winnipeg.
Chris saw White Lion on their own, headlining.
Not headlining. I saw them on a bill with Vixen and Ozzy.
Oh, that's what it was.
No Rest for the Wicked.
Dude. That was the bill?
It was Vixen, White Lion, Ozzy.
Good Lord. That's one of those ones where if I was an Ozzy, well, I am an Ozzy fanatic, I'd be like, this sucks.
Vixen was actually pretty good. White Lion, complete crap. Just wussified garbage.
They, like I said, as a matter of fact, I know for sure, I think they opened for Aerosmith on the Permanent Vacation. Then they came back and opened for AC/DC.
Oh, terrible.
Worst call ever.
Get them out. Run them off the stage.
Well, let me ask you this. Here's the other one. Queensryche, Rage for Order era, opening for AC/DC on the Who Made Who tour. And then fast forward to White Lion and Aerosmith. Which would be a worse mix? White Lion and AC/DC? White Lion, AC/DC, or Queensryche and AC/DC?
White Lion, for sure. At least Queensryche had some balls to them.
But I get why you would ask that question.
Some fortitude. But it was like, you know, Queensryche is like thinking man's metal, whereas AC/DC comes directly from the groin. Yeah.
Like Queensryche Rush would make sense. Yeah, as far as fan base goes.
But that's what I'm saying, when it's Rage for Order, Queensryche, when they had like the makeup and the, you know, the costumes, and they walk out with Angus Young, it didn't really quite fit. But and like I was saying too, like Steven Tyler, great frontman, one of the greatest rock and roll frontmen ever. Mm-hmm. Rest of the guys, not doing a whole hell of a lot on stage.
Mm. But no, we're looking at pictures. There's a slideshow behind you with a lot of photos. And Steven's dialed in, but everyone else just hanging out.
And I would say Joey Kramer is in the number two spot as far as
because he's jacked up on
most
Joey's
lively and most animated.
He's jacked up on Joey's rock and coffee. That's why.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So the two records in question, like we mentioned, Permanent Vacation, which was August of 1987, released, and Pump, which came out September 89, so about 2 years later, starting this huge Aerosmith resurgence. And we always like to talk, first and foremost, about
about the covers. So we got Permanent Vacation, which is the classic Aerosmith logo over top of some strange...
Like a shirt that someone would have.
Like a Hawaiian shirt, maybe?
In the liner notes, it says tattoo art. So I think it's supposed to be like vintage tattoo shop designs. Oh. That's what that background's supposed to be. But then it's just done in all red. But it's like, you know... Whatever. Well, like,
what does it have to do with a permanent vacation?
Oh, I have no idea.
Well, I don't know if I just opened up.
Get a great picture of 87 Aerosmith in jail.
Maybe that's the permanent vacation.
Well, are they on death row?
Maybe they just got life. I don't know.
And I'm looking at it though, and like you said, Joe Perry, Steven Tyler, hot. Tom Johannesburg, whatever his name is.
We'll go with that.
Tom Hamilton,
Brad Whitford, and Joker, not hot.
No, not. That's definitely not. I think maybe that's what is. This sounds weird to say this as a heterosexual male, but I think as a kid, I was like, these dudes are ugly. I don't like this band.
Well, I didn't like Black Sabbath for the same reason, because I didn't like guys with mustaches in rock and roll. Right. And they had two.
Yeah.
Geezer Butler and Tony Hamilton. I don't like mustaches. Yeah. I don't like Black Sabbath.
Yeah, I only allow one. I'm a Scorpions fan. That's it.
One.
Rudy, and it's got to be that's it.
And it can't be a Tony Iommi mustache. No, that doesn't work.
Gigantic mustache. Iommi is the best Iommi.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, but when you're a kid, it's that's not cool.
So you didn't like ugly...
No, it bothered me. I didn't care for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think
good thing you didn't follow him in the 70s. I mean, they were just destroyed.
And Steven Tyler, too, is a lot like Mick Jagger. When you first see him and go, oh my gosh, this guy's super ugly. But then he's got a charisma. He does. Oh, yeah. He is a pretty good looking guy.
Yeah.
Even though now he looks like, I saw a great picture the other day because he wears his hair kind of in a bun. Okay. And it's kind of got the white stripe in it and stuff. And it says, Steven Tyler looks like that fun aunt. Your friend's aunt that would let you drink at parties.
That's awesome.
I think, I don't know. Tom Hamilton might be, he's in the middle.
Well, he had blonde hair. So, the other cover is Pump, which is actually really kind of cool. It's two old cars, and one's on top of the other one, like he's pumped. Like the car is pumping it from behind.
Is that what it is?
I never, that
makes sense. I just
clear sexual innuendo.
Or if you want to do the Bob Scott thing, it's really about pumping gas into the cars, maybe. But
okay. But why is one little?
Well, I guess it's a little it's
little guy.
Yeah, little guy from behind.
Okay,
pumping you from behind. Some little dude.
That happens.
Maybe a little person. Maybe some kind of midget porn or something.
Dudes of all sizes are welcome.
And this this picture is much more of a beefcake picture with kind of the Joe Perry.
Oh, yeah. The arms are up.
Yeah, look at that vest that he's wearing.
But the things you see the first is Joe Perry and then Brad Whitford. That's hot and definitely not.
Definitely not.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not. They put some time into this picture. You can hardly see Steven Tyler. It's terrible.
Brad Whitford looks like he should have been on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Brad Whitford's like Arn Anderson. He looked old even when he was young.
Yeah, that's true.
He did.
Right?
Yeah.
He never, ever had had a hot period. No.
Still coming.
All right. Chris L., possible rant alert. Both albums produced by Bruce Fairbairn.
I got no problem with his production for Aerosmith. What he did with Kiss is an abomination.
Oh, the Psycho Circus.
But, I mean, clearly he... played a big part in the band's resurrection. I mean, these albums sound great. For this show, I revisited them, and like I said, I owned Permanent Vacation. Listening to it again, it's better than I remember it being.
Right.
And then Pump, I never owned it, but, you know, the singles were all over MTV, and then I got into the deep cuts preparing for this episode, and that's another excellent album. Well, I got no qualms with either of them.
And the thing is, too, Bruce Fairbairn was the kind of mentor. It's so small trying to read this in the cassette, but his mentor, Bob Rock, was his mentor.
Yeah.
So Bob Rock engineered, worked on all of these records, which is how Bob became Bob Rock as well. So Bruce Fairbairn not only did a great job producing himself, but also kind of begat Bob Rock.
Yes, he did.
Which is very cool.
Fellow Canadian.
Correct. Absolutely, from Vancouver. And all these records were at Clear Mountain Studios in Vancouver, including Psycho Circus, which you do not like.
Lots of bacchanalia going on in Vancouver, right?
Strip clubs.
I mean, Bon Jovi did Slippery When Wet up there, didn't they? And the also New Jersey.
Crew did Feel Good up there.
Yeah.
You know, these guys did this record, these records up here. So
ground zero for hedonism.
Canadian version of that.
That's right.
All world version by all accounts. I mean, they all went there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the most decadent bands of the day recorded.
And there was a lot of strip clubs in downtown Vancouver. Oh, yeah. My girlfriend used to work at one.
Oh, yeah?
But he's working. Girls used to dance at one.
Was she the janitor? Or
no, she's one of those girls that broke my heart in Calgary, then moved to Vancouver. And I suddenly just coincidentally, hey, guess what? I'm moving to Vancouver. She's like, really? Yeah, we can, you know, see what happens and maybe go on a date. She's like, no dates, no nothing. And I went and saw her once. And
she
was
just kept going west. Yeah. She went to the ocean.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that.
Russia.
I have a sad, broken heart tale relating to one of the clashes here that will come out later.
Okay. Well, and like I said, so we're going to do a little bit of creative licensing because Permanent Vacation, as you know, Classic Album Clash, we stick to the rule that both albums have to have the same amount of tracks. And Permanent has two, but one's a cover, I'm Down by the Beatles, and one's just an instrumental called The Movie. So we're going to drop those two off, so it's 10 to 10, and we're going to flip-flop Angel with Permanent Vacation because we're going to do Angel versus What It Takes, the two big monster ballads of the record. So those are the rules, and now we will go to the much-anticipated song-by-song battle.
Yes.
And see which album really is better. Because the way I, like you said, Chris, I remember Pump being better than Permanent Vacation, but after listening to both of them, I think there's going to be some very interesting battles here. So starts off Heart's Done Time versus Young Lust. And I think Heart's Done Time is a Desmond Child joint, one of his many that he wrote with Aerosmith at this time frame. And actually, I believe that it was Paul Stanley that...
Nick's confirming, yes, true.
Yeah, Joe Perry, Desmond Child.
Okay, so I think Paul got them hooked up with Aerosmith, and a great Desmond Child story to tell as we move later on. But I'll start off. Heart's Done Time, really love this song, and I actually suggested it to a couple people to use as ring music.
Really?
Because it starts off with wails, and it kind of builds, and then it's like... great opening track, and this is my favorite Aerosmith. Very groove, powerful, and Steven Tyler's got that voice, right? Young Lust, Aerosmith, a lot like Kiss. Fast Aerosmith doesn't work. When they get in this Young Lust double bass, I don't ever want to hear Joey Kramer play double bass. It's not what Aerosmith does. So for me, I got to go with Heart's Done Time, one of my favorite from all of these records, and a great ring music song for powerhouse Paul Laser.
Oh,
a young upstart who's needed a ring song, and I gave him that one back in about 91 in Calgary.
It's a good one.
So there you go.
I'll go next. Heart's Done Time is a fun little song about a young man visiting a woman after her man goes to work at night, right? Which is a fun song until you get older and you get married and you have a job. And then it becomes a lot less fun. You're thinking about what's going on. I don't like this song anymore. It used to be something. Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, no longer funny.
Yeah.
Suddenly it shakes you to the core.
But I'll take Heart's Done Time. I'm with you. Same thing. I like the groove of it more. And anytime there's the... like the snare fill with Steven Tyler. Anytime that happens, I'm in.
And I find Young Lust is kind of a mess of a song, too. There's no real hook. It just goes all over the place. To me, I remember when I had that record, I was like, this is not a good opening song, but I know why they used it, because it's fast. And it was the 80s. And you had to kick off your record with a fast song.
Yep.
What do you think, Nick?
To what you were saying about it being pretty fast, I actually made a little note here that I really enjoyed when it went halftime, half tempo, and it had a really great groove at that point.
It's just the breakdown after the initial.
It was fast most of the song, and then it just kind of into like a half tempo kind of a groove kind of thing. And I really that got my attention as far as okay, that was a really cool move for them to throw in there. I think it there's some faster Aerosmith songs that could work. I can't think. Off the top of my head, unfortunately. It's kind of like, we did a lot of Kiss, and it's kind of like some of those mid-80s. I know you're a huge fan.
Yes.
But some of those mid-80s faster kind
of... Huge fan, but none of those ones. We talk about Boomerang, it's just a mess.
Yeah.
They're not that type of a band.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think everybody likes No 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 or something like that. Right. I mean, it's just some bands, that's not what they want. And I've always liked Hearts Done Time, so I'm going to go with Hearts Done Time as well.
Chris?
Yeah, I'll make it a clean sweep for Hearts Done Time. I will say that on both these cuts, the lately much maligned Joey Kramer plays his ass off on both songs.
Yeah.
Just great drumming on both. I'm giving the nod to Hearts Done Time because, like you alluded to, Chris, that it harkens more to classic Aerosmith, that kind of groovy sort of, you know, slightly sloppy, yeah, almost going off the rails kind of rock vibe. And I'm going to also, another tipping point for me, a little underappreciated, but that descending bass line by Tom Hamilton.
Agreed.
That boom, 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 where it drops down is really cool, and also harkens back to classic Aerosmith more than Young Lust does.
And also, too, the chorus on Hearthstone Time, it's classic Desmond Child.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. That could be Bon Jovi. It could be any of the you know, Ricky, what's his name?
Ricky Martin.
Martin, that sort of thing.
Guy, man, dude.
What are we thinking about the use of whale sounds? Whale sounds are pretty popular around this time frame. As Star Trek IV, the search for the future, where they're trying to transport the whales. Do you remember this?
I vaguely do, but...
Yeah, there's a big whale Star Trek movie around the same time, so...
Or
lots of whale
bad
action.
Idea. Yeah, one thing I'll say is the patience I have in 2020 is almost non-existent with the way you listen to music these days.
Right.
Where it's like 30 seconds of like this soundscape building up to something. It's like, come on, get on with it already.
Great point.
But you know, if you put the album on and you're going to sit down and listen to it, it's cool in context. But yeah, like when you're on shuffle on your phone driving somewhere, you're like, what is this shit?
I'm a seconds. Big proponent of the beginning of the album has to have something, because in my mind, using the old Metallica Iron Maiden, where you open with your album opener every time, actually the first two songs of their set is always the first two songs of the record, so there has to be something going on to show that it's the opening of the record, in my opinion.
Like something like this, like Hearts Done Time.
I like the fact that it builds. Like you mentioned, if you just listen to it on shuffle, weird. But if you put on the new Aerosmith record, there's some drama there to get you into it. Right?
Agreed.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
All right, so then we go to Magic Touch, Tyler Perry and Jim Vallance. And this is not Tyler Perry, the movie director. This is Steven Tyler and Joe Perry.
I wouldn't mind hearing the D sig Magic Touch.
I'll say it again. He's the closest thing we have to Charlie Chaplin these days.
So. Well, how do you mean?
Because
Jim Vallance?
No, Tyler Perry.
Okay. With Steven Tyler and Joe Perry's songwriting team, or the actual Tyler Perry?
The actual Tyler Perry.
Okay. Why is he the modern day Charlie
Chaplin? Because he does it all. He has his own studio, his own production studio.
True story, yeah.
He does everything. He owns everything, writes everything.
Directs, produces.
Acts in everything, yeah.
All right, well, shout out to Tyler Perry. If he's listening, we appreciate your work. At least Nick does. Mm-hmm. I have never seen anything that he's done, although I did get an offer to be in one of his Halloween movies.
Oh my God.
And I couldn't do it because I had to work or some stupid thing. But there's like, I get an actual offer is hard.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we'll an audition. Audition or like, you know, we'll consider like calling me cold. And I couldn't do the...
It's too bad.
The Madea.
You can do Boo or Boo 2, which is... He's up to 2 right now.
Yeah. So. Well, maybe they have to do Boo 3.
That would be fantastic.
Look out, world, because here I come. All right, Magic Touch, like we said, versus Fine, Fine, which is another Desmond Child joint. Tyler Perry and Desmond Child. Fine, Fine. Does anyone know what that stands for?
I don't.
I do.
I noticed it on Google and I forgot it.
It's up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
So it's right. not fine.
It's not fine. Exactly.
It's the opposite. F-I-N-E. Of fine. It's like, yeah.
Never. Yeah. Chris L., what do you think about these two?
This was probably the closest decision for me. Magic Touch is great.
Great.
But I've got to give the edge to F-I-N-E strictly because of the lyrics. I mean, especially the... it's not even an allusion to it. It's a straight up announcement of analingus toward the end of the
wow.
song. I mean,
what does he say?
Let me find it.
Sticking his yeah.
Yeah, I shove my tongue right between your cheeks. I haven't made love now for 25 weeks.
I don't know. I always try to think of what the 25 is significant for. Does the 25 weeks mean something? Is that a reference to something? No, I've never heard that.
6 months and 1 week. There you go. 25 weeks? Right.
It's just, it must be just a random thing.
Because yeah. it rhymes. Cheeks. And
sounds good.
25 weeks. I can't say
26 weeks.
Stick my tongue in 12 weeks. It has to be a week. So it has to be like 25. Love the line. It's I got no rubbers, but it's yeah, raining right. all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What a great line. And
using the word rubbers in a song, I mean, that's a weird idea.
Well, and sonically what goes on during that line is they have it sound kind of like the quote-unquote old-timey
oh, yeah.
kind of a vocal
yeah.
effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, early on in my music listening career, maybe when I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, I established at that point that any song that speaks of analingus is going to be an automatic winner for me.
At that age, you already made that rule.
I think I developed that rule listening to a Simon and Garfunkel album. I don't know how that happened, but
I don't remember that.
But, the sound of analingus, I think.
Yeah.
It was released in Germany.
Analingus, isn't that an Alter Bridge song?
Yeah, no,
it's Metalingus. Okay.
It's the sound of analingus.
At least that's how I heard it.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
But yeah, that so sticking to my rule, F-I-N-E wins.
Love, I'll jump in here. Love, you guys always have an appreciation for a good mama in a song or announcing the band member's name. CC, mm-hmm. pick up that guitar.
All good
or like
stuff.
Bruce.
Yep.
This has a great one. You're all right. Even Tipper says I'm all right. Tipper Gore. Got a lot of that. Even Joe Perry says I'm all right.
Yeah.
What a great line. Joe, it's not just Joe, it's Joe Perry.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, hey, what's up, Mick, Keith, or Mick, Tommy,
that's a,
Vince, that, or whatever the hell
Steven
it is.
Tyler seems to have, like, a great friendship with Joe Perry, but then Joe Perry always seems to kind of be so, kind of, he's Mr. kind of cool and nonchalant all the time.
Yeah, I think Joe's the problem.
You think
he's
so?
Got, he's
got
to be. Yeah.
He's got, he's it's unrequited, unfortunately.
I met Joe at the Golden Gods Awards I used to host. He decided he wanted to be on the show, like, during the show.
Hmm.
So I think one of the bands was, like, Black Dahlia Murder or something like that was playing. You get 20 minutes to play. So we ran down to the parking garage
mm-hmm.
where Joe showed up. And the theme, that was, I was playing the heel host that year.
Heel host?
The heel, like the bad guy.
Yeah.
And the theme was everyone was calling me a douche. So I went down and said, hey, Chris Jericho, glad to have you. Would you mind calling me a douche on stage? And he's like, yeah, I can do that. So I'll just tell you when to do it. I'll give you the cues. Yeah, no problem. So he goes on stage to give out the award, and he starts talking about the plight of, like, the rainforest aborigines in, you know, Abu Dhabi, and he lights up a joint on stage, like, in the venue, which not a big deal, but it's a pretty big deal. Like,
yeah.
super illegal in 2010 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like,
he out-heeled everybody.
He did. And then he goes, oh, by the way, fucking douche. And I was like, yay. So it was my one interaction with Joe Perry. Haven't seen him since, never saw him before, but wow. He called me a fucking douche by
Chris,
request.
Chris L, didn't you interview Joe Perry once? A phone call?
No, never.
No, that was Jay Leno. Sorry.
Oh, I thought you had a Joe Perry cookware.
No, it was Tyler Perry.
Oh, that's what it was.
No, Chris L also. He has an offer for Booth 3. You don't have one yet?
Yeah.
Booth 3. Yeah, Magic Touch, once again, a huge chorus. It's great. But I love F-I-N-E Fine. And it's funny because we're looking at the singles listed and F-I-N-E is not on there. But I heard that on the radio constantly. Winnipeg's a huge Aerosmith town. So I always love that part. Tipper and Joe Perry says I'm all right. Great lyrics. Great start, too.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a dirty,
Walk This Way type riff, exactly what I love from my Aerosmith. So I'm going with Fine.
Magic Touch has a really strong hook. The chorus is a
great harmony too.
Yeah, and how he goes up higher, like Can't Let Go lyric. I mean, it's a great song, but and as much as I find the lyrics pretty embarrassing for F-I-N-E, I still think it's got probably the most energy out of any song on the album. Mm-hmm. Out of maybe both albums. It's got the most energy, and it's just the whole song just drives, and it's got a really great melody. And I read in my it's like 23 years old already, but the Aerosmith little autobiography, Walk This Way, that F-I-N-E was very nearly the album title.
Huh.
And Brad Whitford came up with Pump, and that stuck.
I think Pump's better as an album title. Fine doesn't really make sense.
No.
If it was called Fucked Up, Insecure, Neurotic, and Emotional.
Or For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge.
Exactly right. I was going to say that next.
I like the Joe Perry name drop. Reminds me of, we had an old copy of a cassette, Classics Live 2, during Moving Out. He No One Knows the Way of a Joe Perry, gets a little pop from the crowd, in there. Hangman Jury throwback, and during the outro, the little fade out, he goes into that. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
What does he say?
He does the
hey boy.
No, I think it's the part where he sings the part about where the rock where Moses done stood, something like that.
Oh,
I don't remember exactly, but wow. During the fade out, you can hear him, and it's brief, but he's pretty much
nice
doing
nice little
that.
Callback to the song.
And I mean, the lyrics, I'm less comfortable with the lyrics than maybe others, but still a great song, and I'm going to go with F-I-N-E.
Gotcha.
F-I-N-E, fine for me too.
Two clean sweeps in a row.
Rare. Yeah, Analingus, like Chris said. He also mentions, "I'm gonna kiss your boo boo, honey," which that's another one, and that's kind of ahead of its time.
Is that where Honey Boo Boo got her name from listening to Aerosmith?
And this is not to be confused with the Tyler Perry Boo 2 and Boo 3.
No, but there are connections.
And don't forget this line, which is something Gene Simmons probably kicked himself for not writing. You're so tight, your loving squeaks, and I'm ready. I mean, that's terrible. You can't
relentless.
You can't say that in 2020.
No, you can't.
We had a meeting yesterday with sexual harassment people and what you can and can't do. One thing you couldn't do was read the lyrics to this song.
That was on the list.
That's on the list. Yeah.
Don't read it.
They had it up on the projector, and it was just a bunch of black line, like redacted stuff.
This is not water cooler talk.
Right. Unless you're into Analingus and squeaky
and
love.
Then, speaking of which, in the era of coronavirus that we're in, where like everybody's all about like spend 90 seconds washing your hands, I gotta believe Analingus is off the list. I mean,
yeah,
that's just not sanitary.
Somebody posted a graphic the other day and said, "God, are they still licking each other's buttholes?" Guy, more than ever. God, more coronavirus, please.
Exactly. I would think that's something that's just gotta be gone by the
who would
wayside.
Know? Like, what some deep conversations here. Yeah. On the Classic Album Clash.
And that's kind of ahead of its time, because that's what I hear all the kids are doing these days. They just snort Xanax and lick each other's buttholes on...
snorting Xanax from each other's buttholes.
TikTok or whatever. I'm out of the loop.
No wonder China is completely shut down these days. Jesus.
So I got one more thing about Fine. I didn't know what this meant, but he says, "I got an emo Woody."
Wow.
You guys know what that means? It's not emo like EMO. It's... EHMO in all caps, and I'm like, what is that? Because he's singing about a car or something.
EHMO?
Like, yeah. So I looked it up, and it means an early morning hard-on Woody, which is like redundant.
He has a boner.
He has a boner. Yeah, I just cracked a boner, Rodney.
It's like when people say ATM machine. You don't have to say machine. The M means
two twins.
Yeah.
We've got two twins. Love the fact that he snuck in emo. And I would say probably Bruce Fairbairn did not know what that meant, and probably just like in the fine tradition of Eddie Van Halen not knowing what the fuck Roth is ever talking about, just lets it go. Probably emo Woody, whatever.
Sounds good.
Yeah, because I'm envisioning Fairbairn's probably like 50. I don't know how old he is. He's not with us anymore, right?
No, he's not.
Gotcha. Well, two clean sweeps with two great tunes. This one, hard. This is when the big time number one hits kick in. Ragdoll versus Love in an Elevator. Oh my goodness. Who wants to take that one to start on with it?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Love Ragdoll. Love the video with especially Joey Kramer
beginning
hitting the two bass drums. I mean, that's like one of the coolest visuals.
Good call.
From a rock video, in my opinion. It's one of the most like struttable songs, I would say. Strutting down the street to this song makes perfect sense. The phrase "hot tramp" gets thrown out.
Yeah.
So I mean, and it's got a feel of like a New Orleans funeral. Huh. March kind wow. of a thing. Like
it does. You put some time into this.
Yeah. Well, that one, yeah.
No wonder I wanted to go get a Popeyes after I listened to this one.
The most random call ever, Popeyes.
So, that being said, I'm still going to go with Love in an Elevator. It's, for me, it's the title is like the snakes on a plane of rock and roll. It's so outlandish, and it's almost like a guilty pleasure. Right? Like you almost feel silly when you're listening to it, but it's awesome. I mean, I always thought so. One thing I wanted to point out, whether our fifth guest was going to be here or not, that there's that riff that goes into the solo. It's always makes me think of Cotton Amash.
Oh, which right, is like
you wouldn't think the Love in an Elevator would have anything similar to that, but that always makes me think of it. And the video, I always thought it was hilarious because it looks like Steven Tyler is coming from a Ren Faire right behind us. It's actually coming up right now. and that's
there he is. That right hat. There.
So I'm going with that. It's a guilty pleasure, but it's fantastic. So
I'll pick up where you left off. I think, once again, Ragdoll, I thought it was always a cool song. It's obviously a big hit. It's a great follow-up to Dude Looks Like a Lady. A lot more doomies in there. Let me go into doomie to the back door. Doomie.
Doomie all the time, apparently. With
that's
this
the
guy.
One. It goes into a little Mae West, which is great. Come on over, see me. I always like that.
Right.
But I think, much like you said about F.I.N.E. having the best energy, to me, Love in an Elevator is probably my... might be my favorite Aerosmith song. Outlandish subject matter.
Yeah.
But as a musician, I would find, especially you guys would know more, especially Chris as a guitar player, Aerosmith songs, not the hardest to play, but there's a feel you have to have. Love in an Elevator is hard. It's almost prog rock in parts. It reminds me a lot of Kiss, being Kiss, and then they do King of the Mountain with that middle part. Like, great riff, great middle section, and a great kind of Beatlesque fade out with that great harmony.
Oh, the harmony. Yeah. Yes.
I think in the video actually shows them singing.
We're going to do it together.
Okay. Yeah, at the end of the episode,
going down, loving and I love it, living it up as I'm going down. Yeah, so I'm going with the Elevator for sure.
Me too. Same thing. Ragdoll would be almost anything else on Pump, but it's not going to be Love in an Elevator. Mm-hmm. So Love in an Elevator. One line that stands out, and it kind of makes me think of this room, is you're used to these kind of nice accommodations, but the Pot of Thunder guys are some penthouse paupers today.
Going to be a penthouse papa. Whoa. Yeah. This might be the first time you guys didn't have to dismantle a bed with your tools.
Yeah,
it's a living room. Your stuff.
It's a living room here.
Well, you know, we like to trash hotel rooms just like everybody else.
So. Yeah, every other band.
Lyrically, Love in an Elevator, the concept of it couldn't be more foreign to me. Like, I can't wrap my mind around that. It's like a Dragon Force song makes more sense to my real life than Love in an Elevator. But the only thing I could relate to is that he starts on the second floor and he's done by the time he gets to the first floor.
It's a tall building, maybe.
Can I
tall ceilings?
Can I throw this out to you guys? Yeah. Can you guys name another Love in an Elevator song?
I know one, but I can't think of it.
I got one, and it's the same thing because it's only about a floor. 10 Seconds to Love, Motley Crue.
Oh, man.
Gonna find you an elevator. You only get 10 seconds to have love. So they went from the second floor to the first floor. And their elevator was much quicker than Steven's because Steven had more time.
Yeah.
Nicky did not. He had 10 seconds to love.
That's a good elevator for
Steven
me.
Hit the emergency stop button in between floors. Actually, in college, I banged a chick in the freight elevator, and I stopped it between floors.
Oh my gosh.
Overnight in the dorm.
Is this the broken heart story that you're going to tell
no,
us?
No, that was a conquest story for sure. But I was like the front desk guy overnight, you know?
I love...
And so I had to do the rounds of the dorm to make sure all the doors hadn't been propped open, and I took this chick I was seeing down to the game room where the freight elevator was. Ran it up between floors and had a good time.
Wow. See, I love those days. You don't have to worry about any security cameras or whatever. Just shut it down. Now if you shut an elevator down between floors, there'd be a security guard like bopping in there instantly.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. CNN will be there.
And the whole thing. Yeah.
It'll be streaming live.
Right. What are you thinking between elevator and ragdoll, Chris?
You know, I'm going to go against the grain a little bit in so far as this was an easy decision for me. I never liked Ragdoll very much. I thought it was kind of schmaltzy, and the stuff you liked about the video I thought was kind of stupid. And just the song never appealed to me. Love in an Elevator is great. You know, the fact that it was a number one single, that it's 5.5 minutes long, and it's got all those...
Good call. With the intro,
complex musical changes going on is pretty impressive. And then I'll just say, with regard to the video, those two bikini chicks with the mannequins turn into the live women.
Yeah, that's right.
Dancing behind Brad Whitford as he's like a retail clerk or whatever in a department store. If the one on the left it doesn't send you scrambling to the bathroom. And hoping there's some hand lotion in there. I don't know.
What timing? She was there.
I mean, that the one on the left is unbelievable.
She's
the
hot
one. She's way back in the distance, and it still sends you to the bathroom every time.
It's their greatest video, I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. It's genuinely funny.
And also, like, about Steven Tyler, like, he's very much a old school vaudevillian type entertainer as a rock and roll singer. His scatting at the beginning of this, it's really good.
He's like doing that through his nose. It seems impossible to do it that well.
He's like the Henny Youngman of rock. Like, if Henny Youngman was a singer, he'd be scatting through his nose. Cab Calloway. Manair the Mucha. Yeah, come on over, see me.
And he goes into Al Jolson every once in a while. I mean,
So we've had three landslides.
We're agreeing with each other.
It's kind of not fun.
Kind of lame.
I think this is going to break it up, though, because these are two epitomes of an album track. Mm-hmm. It's Samaria versus Monkey on My Back, and I haven't listened to these albums as a whole in a while. Couldn't remember how either one of them went until I heard them, which tells you how... kind of obscure they are. And Samaria, though, Jim Vallance is on that. So this is actually a actual songwriter that they tried to get some hit.
Jim Vallance, the Charlie Chaplin of entertainment, of today's entertainment. Just want to remind everybody about that.
I thought that was Tyler Perry.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I mix those two up.
He's the Buster Keaton of
entertainment. You want to start this one off, Chris? Do you know both these two?
Kind of like you said that F.I.N.E. Fine was played a lot on Winnipeg radio or whatever, and Detroit radio played the hell out of Monkey on
Really?
Back. It was not an album cut. It was essentially a single.
No kidding.
Detroit.
Edited, I'm sure, right? At least in one spot?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's pretty blatant.
It got a lot of radio play.
Oh, because get that Monkey off my back.
And it's not one of those. It's not one of those where you hear it on the radio. Did he swear? Maybe
it's
not.
It's right in
your
face.
Yeah.
But I'm actually going to go with Samaria.
Wow.
And it was a close one, but I prefer the energy of Samaria, and you know, and we'll get into this also with the next track on Pump. But you know, when Aerosmith starts to get a little more serious and addressing their previous drug issues, it's a little too weighty for me.
It's not U2, it's Aerosmith, right?
I want to hear more about analingus, things of that nature.
Things of that nature. Yeah, right. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Analingus and things of that nature.
Your drug things, that's fine. And it's a good song. I heard it a lot on the radio, but I'm going with Cimariah here.
Okay. Andy?
Cimariah. Don't want to waste too much time because it's a real coin toss. Nothing from either song really grabs me in any way, but picking one or the other, Cimariah.
There you go. Over to you.
For me, Cimariah absolutely decimates Monkey on My Back.
Oh, wow.
Always loved Cimariah. Mm. It's on my 80s hard rock Spotify playlist.
No kidding.
Yes.
Big Cimariah fan.
Big fan. Love it. Maybe my favorite song on the album.
Damn.
Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious.
That's a hot take.
Well.
Wow.
Monkey on My Back. I mean, I admire, you know, the fact that it's you know, kind of a good influence on if you got kids listening to it. It puts
exactly
it,
why it sucks.
It's in a cool way, you know. They always say, "Oh well, you know, the kids." If you try to talk down to them, they can tell and they don't care and they're gonna think you're lame. But in a cool Aerosmith song, guys who have been through it and are now, that's, I mean, that was pretty well known by Permanent Vacation.
Oh, big time.
That was the gimmick that they're clean now, like Dr. Feelgood. You know,
that lasted
like
about a month. They're still not clean.
But it, I mean, I admire that aspect of it, but love Cimariah. Fantastic song.
Okay. Never heard somebody with such a affinity for Cimariah. That's cool.
I'm the guy.
When you listen to it, like I said, after not remembering both the songs, obviously as soon as I heard it, like Cimariah was much more melodic and better than I remembered. Mm-hmm. I just think I just didn't like the song title. I thought it was stupid. So much like when you hear a dumb song title, it kind of turned me off right off the bat.
It's a girl's name, like Shein.
Yeah, she's Cimariah.
You don't know a Shein. You don't know a Cimariah.
I get it. But Monkey on My Back, by far for me, my favorite. Ooh. Great drums on it. I love the beginning of it. I love kind of the lazy, like slide guitar thing.
Yeah.
And once again, the pattern of what I like from my Aerosmith is those, as I said, Slash one time. I said, your riffs are slimy. He's like, yeah, I like that slimy. And this is a slimy Aerosmith. Like, it's just, I found they're really in the groove. If you take out Young Lust, those three songs, Fine, Elevator, and Monkey, have some great riffs and great playing in it. So Cimariah, better than I remember. Monkey on My Back, definitely a killer tune and probably one of my top three on the Pump album.
Okay.
There you go. Finally, some division there. Something better, yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The two possibly biggest hits on the record against each other, of Dude Looks Like a Lady and Janie's Got a Gun. Another huge hit at 5:38. That's a long song for radio. Yeah. Nowadays, if you do 4:01, radio programmers want to play it. Everybody wants 3:59. It's a true story.
Wow.
I'll start with this one. Dude Looks Like a Lady. That's what got me into Aerosmith at this time frame. Great story on the Talk is Jericho with Desmond Child when he said that he first met with Aerosmith. He came in the room and they said, "We're going to play this for you." And they had the loop. Anana, 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 anana. And the song title at the time was Cruising for the Ladies, anana, anana, cruising for the ladies. And he was like, they go, "What do you think?" And he's like, "I think it sucks."
Yeah.
Terrible song title. It's the worst ever.
He's right.
Yeah. And they were going to, and they said, "Well, we were going to call it Dude Looks Like a Lady, but we don't know what that means." And Desmond's like, "I'm gay. I know what that means." And convinced them about Dude Looks Like a Lady. And it's a crazy, weird song title, much like Love in the Elevator. It just doesn't make sense, but great riff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here we go. Do me, do me, do me all night. Yeah. He's got a lot of doomies here. it was one of the first times you ever heard that looping sound, which is kind of very common now with computers and stuff, with the fact they're able to use that. So great verse to cruising to a bar on the shore, blah, 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 blah. And much like what Chris L said about Ragdoll, never liked Janie's Got a Gun. Don't like the riff now. Don't like the melody. don't like that brown, 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 brown. Like, it sucks. And like, what the f*** are you singing about gun control, Aerosmith? Like, f*** off.
Domestic abuse or whatever.
Rage Against the Machine? Go away.
Yeah. I need escape from this.
Two songs earlier, you were loving in an elevator, and now you're singing about gun control? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, leave that to Pearl Jam and those sad sack bleeding hearts. I want my dudes that look like a lady.
So you have an Eddie Vedder on next week? Watch your mouth around the huge Pearl Jam fan over there.
Not saying I'm not a fan. I'm just saying that Jeremy's spoken in class days about gun control. That's fine for Pearl Jam. It's not fine for Aerosmith. Mm-hmm. This is a dog of a song. I would never listen to this unless it came on the radio and I had to. Dude Looks Like a Lady. That's the winner. That's what I'm going with.
I'm not going to go with Janie's Got a Gun. I'm going to go with Dude Looks Like a Lady, but I will say it's a great song, Janie's Got a Gun. I mean, it really is. And it's got the bouncy kind of...
It was a huge hit.
But it really, like, once you get into the vocals and everything, it's really a fantastic song. And, I mean, it's an uncomfortable...
It's very well produced as well. And by the way, a rare songwriting credit from Tyler and Tom Hamilton.
Tom Hamilton.
That probably paid for his house, a couple houses.
I would think so.
That's a big... song. Good job, Tom.
That's let's see here.
I wonder what it, pun intended, what it took to get that songwriting credit. Because I wonder what he contributed to. Probably that bass line.
I would say the riff, because it's Tyler Tom Hamilton. So I bet you he wrote the tune.
I'm pretty sure Sweet Emotion was also.
It was.
And that's Tom Hamilton. Did he get a songwriting credit?
I'm fairly certain he did. So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense then.
I'm going to go with Dude Looks Like a Lady. I mean, it's such a, like you said, it's a weird, crazy song, a completely outlandish title. And I read in the book here that the reason that he, Steven Tyler, had the guts to go with the title Love in an Elevator is because, hey, I did Dude Looks Like a Lady. I'm sticking with
that.
Love
gave him the creative license.
It worked then. I'm going to do it. You know, this is just as outlandish. I'm going to do it again.
So. Right. And Tom did have Sweet Emotion. That's Tyler and Tom. So he does work some tunes in there. It's like Queen with like John Deacon.
Yeah.
The two songs he wrote were huge.
That's all you need.
Same with Tom Hamilton. So good on him. Congratulations, Tom, if you're listening.
All right. I got a lot to say about both of these, so bear with me.
Can you say that in a Paul Stanley voice, please? I got a lot to say about both songs. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Dude Looks Like a Lady. I love the use of horns in a song in this era.
Great call.
Because it's pretty rare.
It's all over both albums.
Yeah.
But lots of horns on here.
Pretty rare for a rock band in this era, though, to have any horns at all. So very cool. Thematically ahead of its time, because if you listen and pay attention to what he's saying, he finds out that this hot woman has a penis, and he's just like, whatever. That's my lady.
Very open to it.
Yeah, and it's not like, oh, what the, you know, there's no... Yeah. So it's like, it's 1987, but it's 2020.
And that was also Desmond's line. She pulled out a gun and blew me away.
Yeah.
Get it?
There you go, yeah.
Once again, Gene Simmons is going, damn it!
Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, there's baritone sax in here, which I think is the perfect instrument to accompany a surprise penis that you weren't expecting. And is it a coincidence that a song about a man dressed as a woman is written by Tyler Perry?
And Desmond Child. I love that line, though. We don't know what that means. It's Joe Perry. We don't know what that means. I'm gay. I know what it means.
Janie's Got a Gun. The percussion at the beginning and like the bass tone and the whip cracks. You know, there's like the whoosh. That always reminded me, like, I picture Robert Stack walking down some misty railroad tracks. It always reminded me of Unsolved Mysteries, and I didn't like it for that reason. It gives me the creeps.
Only on the classic album Clash with a Pot of Thunder Brothers would we get a Robert Stack and a Tyler Perry and a Buster Keaton reference, all within about 10 minutes.
Yeah, we can't help ourselves.
And don't forget analingus discussions.
And then,
that's the title of this episode, I'm pretty sure.
Last thing. This came out the same year as 18 in Life by Skid Row.
Wow, interesting.
But that came out in January. And it kind of has a similar vibe as far as subject matter, that it's like this person committing this. It's like a serious song, and there's this act of violence and the repercussions of said violence. And not what you'd expect from bands.
But basically,
of this time.
Though, the story is that Janie was getting molested.
Yeah,
and she pulls out a gun and shoots the guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So she's the hero because
she's the hero, but she's going to jail too.
Oh,
like,
she goes to
jail. There's the other part of that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so that, she has to deal with
she's
the
going,
vicious circle.
She's that. Going she's, for her permanent vacation.
There you go. Yes. There
call
you
back. Very much
call
so.
Back. Mm-hmm. Call back.
And a song, the more recent song that I think is even closer in theme is "Dear Father" off the last Sabbath album, because it's about a religious.
Was that actually person. On the album? Was that one of the seven bonus tracks?
It's the last one on the official whatever was, normal.
What album am I supposed to listen to?
Normal release, yeah, yeah. Similar thing, someone getting abused and then so offing the person.
What are you choosing?
I am going to choose "Dude Looks Like a Lady."
Okay,
yep.
Yeah, it's pretty. Pretty one-sided, in my opinion. But what do you think, Chris?
Dude looks like a lady, hands down. My opinion is almost exactly the same as yours, Chris. Janie's Got a Gun never did it for me. It was like them just trying to be too serious, and it just didn't compute with me. And Dude Looks Like a Lady is incredible. Just it's so audacious and over the top, and like in the video, the best part for me is when he like it like that in syncopating with his hip thrusts in the video. Fucking great. And huge props to Mr. Perry, incredible guitar solo.
Agreed.
I mean, that thing is flawless. Great feel. It's a clean kind of guitar tone.
It's a clean
sound,
it's
not like a shredding guitar solo. It's just pure rock and roll front to back. Great composition to it, and it really makes a song for me.
It's one of those things, like I said, when we kind of rediscovered Aerosmith with these records, and we talked about kind of the yin and yang of Perry and Tyler. Joe Perry is a great guitar player, man. Like, he really is. They're, you know what, they're very similar to AC/DC in that every guy in that band fits that band perfect, and they're a great machine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
Any merit to the fact that the Dude Looks Like a Lady is that Steven Tyler saw Vince Neil at the bar, Rainbow or something?
Is that where that original?
Well, that was kind title? Of the idea of that. But that's the urban legend.
The urban legend.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But we don't know what that means.
Yeah, Vinnie Barbarino.
Yeah. We move on to Saint John versus the Other Side, and this is don't forget this little instrument going down. Love Elevator, Water Song, Janie's Got It. This is the Dulcimer Stomp.
Actually, Water Song was another one that had a different title. It was originally Water Sports, and Joe Perry was like, "We don't know what that means." And, but they did. In this case, they didn't relent to Mr. Child, unfortunately.
Dulcimer Stomp. That's got a really cool intro for The Other Side, which was another big radio hit. You want to start this one off, Andy?
Sure. Between the two, I'm taking The Other Side. Saint John, I'm not a huge fan of the blues, like in its purest form. I get the influence that it's had on a lot of the music that I like, but I don't like it on its own. Mm-hmm. I get it, I respect it, but it's not my thing. So The Other Side is what I'm going with. And I always thought it was funny that in so many songs, the subject of "Mama told me this important lesson." Did that happen in your, like, did your mom give you all this advice? My mom's great, but the only thing advice she ever gave me was like, take some business classes. Like, she never gave me any of these, like, stay away from these kinds of girls and all that, you know, like.
When
these,
I was just a baby, yeah. Mama sat me on
exactly.
her knee.
Never. Yeah. She's like, what do you mean you want to study that? Yeah. Study business.
My mom, there was this book, it was called Where Did I Come From? And it was cartoon depictions of sex. She basically threw that book at my brother and I and said, read that. And that was it. No sitting on the knee. No spoken advice. It's like,
when I was just a baby.
Yeah, read that. And that's it. So I can't relate to that.
Keep it going, Chris. St. John versus Other Side.
You know, I'm gonna do the same thing to The Other Side. It's so overrated. That song just never did it for me.
Other Side.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Never did it for me. And I actually agree with Andy. It's like overt nods to the blues are not really my thing either. But going back to how you described Slash as playing, the slimy groove to it has got what St. John has, and that's definitely more appealing to me than
interesting. I like the fact you took St. John. That's good.
Yeah, the other side just was always so overrated.
See, to me, that's one of the tunes I love. There's a side, no pun intended, of Aerosmith that just goes full on radio, glossy sheened pop, and just Take Me to the Other Side. It's just great. And this is actually interesting song title. Songwriters here, this is like a rap song. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 writers on this. One of them named Lamont Dozier was on the songwriter.
God, no.
Well, that's another thing I noticed. That was those guys. That's a Four Tops, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There was a lawsuit.
There was a lawsuit.
There was a lawsuit. Standing in the Shadows of Love is the original.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That was the original. What?
That's the song that it was a little too close to. Kind of.
Really?
What's the part that in the other side? What loving you has
Do
got
me,
to be
probably
loving you has got to be like the devil in the deep blue sea.
Right.
That part, standing in the shadows of love.
Oh, yeah,
it's like the same thing. So yeah, there was a lawsuit,
And that's Holland Dozier Holland. That's one of those
Four Tops.
Songwriter. Like I googled this. The songwriting team of Holland Dozier Holland were eventually given songwriting credit on the song after threatening to file suit over what they perceived to be similarities between Other Side and their song Standing in the Shadows of Love. Yep. Interesting. Standing in the shadows of love, like the devil in the deep blue sea.
I mean, it's just one part, but it's big enough.
I didn't know that.
Significant enough.
It's like My Sweet Lord George Harrison with the Chiffons or whatever it was, the Shirleys, whatever they were called. I'm going to continue. Yes, Other Side for me. St. John, once again, I find St. John is a filler track. We need a song here. We like the blues. I get it, but as you know, a 16-year-old kid that just heard Dude Looks Like a Lady and Samaria before it, it didn't really fit in for me. And Other Side, another big radio song, not just in Winnipeg, a number one tune. So I'm taking that. Nick?
I'm going to go Other Side as well, even though I will, to a certain degree, agree with the mysterious Chris L. over here.
Very mysterious.
It's a pretty unremarkable song comparatively.
Right.
Even though, what, doesn't it say on here it was a number one?
Yeah,
so that's number one. Yeah, and so I mean, whatever. But I still like it better than St. John. St. John is fine. The Delta Blues thing, I'm on and off with. It doesn't really grab me. I mean, yeah, it goes. You know, you get the distorted guitars and the big drums and everything coming eventually. But Other Side, I'm gonna go with, even though I'm not a huge fan of it. And I did read that it pushed Deuces Are Wild off of the album. It came late, and then that ended up on the Beavis and Butthead album.
No kidding.
And I like Deuces Are Wild better personally.
So that gives you extra reason to not like The Other Side.
Yeah, and to kind of admire it from a distance.
Why don't you keep it going? Because St. John is almost a sister song with Hangman Jury. It's like a We Will Rock You, We Are the Champions of these two blues songs in the middle of the record.
And that, to me, almost bogs the record down.
Agreed. Especially when there's 12 songs on it already. Yeah, they should have cut one of them.
And why two in a row with this kind of Delta Blues acoustic
Agreed.
Thing going on? It just, to me, it doesn't make sense. Hangman Jury, I think, is a better song than St. John. I have no idea what... hey boy, don't you line the trekalaka means.
Hey boy,
no
idea. Don't you line on the trekalaka.
I know that it's exactly taken from an old Lead Belly song. I don't know what Lead Belly was talking about. And I'm fine with admitting that. So yeah, I'm gonna definitely be going with my girl, believe it or not.
Wow. That's
now, and my reason is I listened to it recently, and there's a really, I don't know if it's conscious or not, but there's a really strong CCR kind of a vibe to it.
Hmm.
It's very like Bad Moon Rising musically. Yeah, and I'm a pretty big CCR fan. So, and plus it's got Voodoo Hoodoo is coming up, and that's a big like Fogerty kind of a thing that he...
Hoodoo, yeah.
Yeah, he'll do songs about. So, and... I think it's a pretty cool song. I mean, it's not great, but it has that element to it, and it's
kind of cool to hear, to realize that, or at least in my own head to think, wow, it's Aerosmith and it's kind of CCR also.
Right.
So it makes it more interesting for me. So I'm going to go with My Girl.
My Girl, I thought, was the theme for the much forgotten Macaulay Culkin Anna Chlumsky vehicle. Where it's the most, it's right after Home Alone, and you think it's going to be a little kid romance. Then Macaulay Culkin dies of a
horrible
bee attack.
Yeah.
What kind of a movie is this?
Terrible.
You know,
I remember watching that and being like, what just happened?
They say, oh, I love my world upside down. He's holding hands with Anna Chlumsky, and here comes a bee's nest, and now he's dead.
Yeah. That didn't have to happen.
Talk about Clint Eastwood twist that I never wanted to see, like Million Dollar Babies. What are you talking about?
He should have been washing his hands more thoroughly. His immune system would have been stronger.
Wash more hands, lick less buttholes.
Exactly.
My Girl, super filler song. Barely remember it after I just listened to it 2 days ago. All I'm thinking about is the Anna Chlumsky. I love the word when you're talking about a movie, the Anna Chlumsky Macaulay Culkin vehicle.
Vehicle, yeah.
I think Ted Danson might have been that too or something.
Dan Aykroyd was the.
Oh, so that's
he was
right.
Like the stepdad.
He was Mr. Saltonfuss.
What?
Veda Saltonfuss was the girl's name.
How do you remember this?
That's the only thing I remember. I don't remember what Chriselle was talking about.
That's a hell of a thing to remember, Veda Saltonfuss.
Well, it's an Saltonfuss.
Lord have mercy.
Hey, boy, don't you lie on the track like a hey, boy. I like that part better than anything My Girl, so I'm going to go with Hangman Jerry, but both of them can jump off a cliff and I could care less about either song.
Hangman Jerry is the best interpretation of the blues by a white man since Mississippi Gary.
Who's Mississippi Gary?
He was Mark McKinney on Kids in the Hall when he was the blues man.
Great Kids in the Hall reference.
I liked My Girl a lot better. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the best on Pump.
Wow, interesting.
Call me crazy. I enjoyed it.
You're crazy.
Yep.
Wow, okay.
You make sense.
My girl,
she breathes hellfire.
It's
a good line.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the hey boy, don't you, whatever he's saying there.
Eye on the track of like
it. It's clearly a reference to, didn't they use slave labor to lay down all the railroad tracks across America? And I think it was, you know, since Lead Belly sang it, it's like a slave song.
It's
not what I want to hear on a party album, you know?
Yeah.
So My Girl, you know, I mean, if I'm at a party where people are into that song, I'm leaving that party.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be busting out the white sheets and God knows what else afterward. Then we transition.
How much of this can you use, by the way?
Then we transition. These are reasonable discussions. Yeah. Come on. He has a worldly audience.
Very much so.
Appreciate this.
They're going to appreciate it.
So you switch over to My Girl, talking about she's a rhyming bareback rider with Lady Godiva. I mean, it's all about the lyrics for My Girl.
Hold on. Bareback rider with Lady Godiva?
Yeah.
That's,
I mean,
great.
It's excellent. Sweeter than honey from a honeybee. I mean, come on.
Well, that's blues. Isn't that blues stuff?
Yeah, but yeah. It's also delivered alongside references to Cats O'Nine Tails and... and other sorts of things.
It's pretty deep.
I mean, yeah, it's excellent. I mean,
by the way, did you just say I want to be your honeybee?
Yeah.
See, it is related to the Macaulay Culkin Anna Chlumsky vehicle.
Wow.
I think on Urban Dictionary, Chlumsky is a term for analingus. So.
Hey, it is now.
It is now. Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of those names like Tracy Scoggins, like Chlumsky.
Yeah.
Best name ever.
Yeah.
Chlumsky equals now analingus.
Kind of like in Harold and Kumar, Blumpkin.
It's totally, yeah. I was actually thinking Blumpkin.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Are enough people doing this to where you need a name for it? It's always been my question about Blumpkin.
Yeah. Not anymore, thanks to coronavirus. Jesus, thanks a lot, Jesus, coronavirus.
And just for the record, Chris L., can you explain what a Blumpkin is?
It's when you're a girl's giving you a head while you're sitting on the toilet taking a shit.
Hey. That's how you doing?
The Guantanamo Bay masterpiece. Right up there with MacGruber.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, guys. Comedies. Appreciate that.
But yeah, My Girl for me.
Okay.
Way ahead of it.
As we get down towards the end of the record, The Girl Keeps Coming Apart versus Don't Get Mad, Get Even. You want to start this one, Andy?
Sure. This is another one where I don't have a ton to say. Neither song really jumps out at me. But I would pick Girl Keeps Coming Apart. interesting, I guess you'd say, spoken word section at the beginning where he's talking about an old floozy flopping in the wind, titties and all. That's before the song starts. That's what Steven Tyler's talking about. Yeah. So
how does that not draw you in?
It does, but as far as the actual song, I give it like a 6 or 7 on a 10-point scale, but I like it better than Don't Get Mad, Get Even. So there you go.
Nick?
Interesting. Well, at least I found it interesting. Little fact that I read about Don't Get Mad, Get Even. Apparently, Joe Perry, for some reason, ran Ragdoll backwards, listened to it backwards, figured out the chord progression and timing, and built Don't Get Mad, Get Even around that.
Really?
That's
off of what tune?
Off of Ragdoll.
No kidding.
That's the story.
Weird.
I'm not a big fan of Don't Get Mad, Get Even. I like that there's a reference to Sally in the Alley. Mm. I don't know if it's if that's a direct reference to the great Robert Palmer song, Sneakin' Sally Through the Alley.
I think it has something to do with Sally Struthers. Anytime you can mention Struthers on a show, it's
analingus queen, Sally Struthers.
How do you think she kept Meathead around? Why do you think he put up with all that abuse from the father-in-law?
Your father-in-law's an asshole, but if it wasn't for this butt-licking, I'd be out of here.
Yeah, I'm going Girl Keeps Coming Apart. I've always liked that song from when I had the tape when I was 7 years old. And in listening to it recently in preparation, I noticed that the guitar solo has an Eddie Van Halen kind of a vibe.
It does.
Which it's very unusual to hear. Well,
but that would clearly have been played by Whitford.
I was going to say that.
Because he's the way more of the technical, smooth, fluid player.
Yeah.
So
that could be then.
So I think it absolutely is. I don't think Joe Perry would even attempt that.
I agree. It's not his style.
So I'll just cut in here.
What did you choose?
Girl Keeps Coming Apart.
Yeah, and I choose that as well. And listening back to Permanent Vacation, this song really jumped out at me as one of the best on the whole album. Both of those solo sections, the two guitar solo sections, the band is just slamming on those. The great bass playing, those insistent thrusts from the horn section coming in and punctuating everything. I mean, the energy on that is excellent. Just, to me, torches Don't Get Mad, Get Even. Mm-hmm. And in terms of song titles, vastly superior. You see a song, Girl Keeps Coming Apart. You're like, what the hell is this going to be about? Mm-hmm. I have to listen. The other, Don't Get Mad, Get Even.
It's a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Keel song.
Right, which that's nothing that anyone should aspire to mimic a Keel song.
much like what you guys said, a Girl Keeps Coming Apart. This one, when I first heard the record, what are you laughing at?
Because they're still laughing. From before.
About Keel?
About Sally Struthers?
I think it's about Sally Struthers.
I love Girl Keeps Coming Apart from when I first heard the record, because that jam section in the middle, it's like it's almost like a Blues Brothers, like bananet and ding 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 bananet ding ding ding. And I love, there's a song on the Synchronicity record called Oh My God by the Police, and there's it's not a similar jam, but there's a part where they just jam, and I love it when you get a rock and roll band who just jams, and there's probably 6 lyrics in the whole song, the rest is just the solo sections back and forth, but there's a great part at the end of the song where Steven does a little spoken word, and I almost could say it verbatim, but I looked up just to make sure. So there she was, buns up and kneeling.
That's right.
I was a wheeling and a dealing, my ace in the hole, so to speak.
I forgot to mention that, yes. I mean, buns up and kneeling. That's right there.
It's my ace in the hole, so to speak.
In fact, that was a line of dialogue from Macaulay Culkin in that movie.
In the vehicle of
Klumsky. It would make sense that Steven Tyler would get together with Luther Campbell and work on something like that theme.
That's what he thought it was
the Run DMC thing worked.
That's right. He thought it was Two Live Crew and it was Run DMC. He got it mixed up. But Girl Keeps Coming Apart, one of the highlights of the record for me, and Don't Get Mad, Get Even, one of the stock, like you said, we need a song, write something up, spend 10 minutes on it, and off you go. So bad fight between those two, because Girl's the winner there. We're going to flip-flop Angel, like you said. So now we go to the title track, Permanent Vacation versus Voodoo Medicine Man. Chris, you want to start this one?
Yeah, I would say these are probably, respectively, my two least favorite cuts on either album. And I'm going to give the nod to, reluctantly, to hoodoo voodoo medicine man, because just
medicine man.
Yeah, just again, just too much of a nod to the blues for my taste. But on the flip side, you've got friggin' Permanent Vacation. You got a steel drum in there. It's like their attempt to be Jimmy Buffett, and I hate Jimmy Buffett. That whole scene that he represents, like boat culture and people who, you know, wearing flip-flops and going on vacation and stuff. It's just like
those assholes going on vacation and shit.
But the way they vacation, and they're, you know, the whole, just everything about the whole Jimmy Buffett parrot head scene just is so revulsive.
I frankly am surprised that you don't have any appreciation, at least lyrically, for Permanent Vacation, because he says in there that he wants a suntan where the sun never shines.
Yeah, but even that.
I'm surprised that didn't just sway it for you.
No, it's just that whole Jimmy Buffett vibe just destroyed it for me immediately. So out the window for that one.
All right. Nick?
Chris L is going to be upset, but Permanent Vacation, probably my second favorite song on that record. Always loved it. I think it's a great song, real catchy. I love the lyrics. I mean, it ended up being the title of the album, which is kind of funny because it's one of those songs that is pretty obscure, I would say.
Yeah.
And even though the album's named after it. Voodoo Medicine Man didn't really do anything for me, even though, like I said, for my girl, I love the whole CCR kind of thing, and Hoodoo Voodoo Medicine Man. Just that title alone screams CCR.
Hoodoo. That's John Fogerty.
That's a lost album, yeah.
Yeah.
But the song itself didn't really do it for me. So, I'm going Permanent Vacation. I always loved it.
I really like Permanent Vacation, too. And once again, you're thinking of this from a kid who's a metal guy in 1987. So I'm already been, Maiden and Metallica are my bands. But I like Permanent Vacation because I love the chorus. I love the fact they use "I really, really need it." Saint-Tropez, gonna get a Saint-Tropez.
See, that's exactly.
And then it ends with the kettle drums, steel drums, random orangutan noises, and jungle birds. And I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm in. I dig it. I love the name Permanent Vacation for a band like Aerosmith. It's like nonstop party. And much like the two-song downswing on Permanent of St. John Hangman Jury, Pump has a three-song for me where it's My Girl, Don't Get Mad, and Voodoo Medicine Man. Couldn't even tell you how any of those songs goes, and I just listened to them literally 3 hours ago after my match when I was at the arena, because it was the last songs I hadn't heard, and I'm like, I don't remember any of these. I just remember that Voodoo Medicine Man, there's some kind of weird voice thing. Permanent Vacation wins for me.
Same here, Permanent Vacation. Kind of going the opposite of what Chris said, Chris L, I kind of like the steel drums in a rock song. I don't think I like steel drums in like a Jimmy Buffett style song. That's not my thing either. But in a rock song, it's kind of different.
In a rock song that's called Permanent Vacation.
Yeah.
Like, come party with us forever.
Why not?
It's like Sammy Hagar's Life is a Permanent Vacation.
Yeah.
Aerosmith was trying to, foreshadow that.
Yeah, I'm into it. So that's my choice.
All right, now we get to the last song on the record, a huge battle between two number one songs. The big monster ballads, Angel versus What It Takes. And let's just get a little research here. I want to find out who wrote these tunes. I think Angel was a...
That's Desmond Child.
I thought it was.
Steven Tyler and Desmond Child.
Angel, Steven Tyler, Desmond Child. What It Takes, Steven Tyler and Desmond Child. That motherfucking Desmond Child, man. That guy can write a chorus like no other. I mean, come on, dude. Like, what a great songwriter. Okay, so there you go. Yeah, so Angel, is Steven, or is Desmond Child. So I'll start this one off. It's tough because, so Angel, 87 is when I started grade 12, which is your senior year. I had a crush on this girl named Karen McFarlane. Karen, if you're listening, I wish things could have been different. She won't be listening. But
she's a huge Pot of Thunder fan. She's
big
listening.
Time, big time.
Mention it on ours.
Because the fall of 87 is when Dude came out, because that's when the record came out. So as the time goes on, Ragdoll was the second single. I graduated in June of 88, which was right around Angel, which was probably, I'd say, March or April of 88 when it came out. So I was so obsessed with this chick, and I was like, Angel was like, I was like envisioning her was my angel.
Yeah.
What a great chorus. Heartbreaking, because I never was able to get my angel. But dude, like, that is the epitome of a great rock and roll ballad. And once again, at 5 minutes long, that's a long tune, man, for a ballad. And then the third huge single on Pump, also 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
Love the fact, Girl Before I Met You, I was F-I-N-E fine. Now Love's Been Taken Prisoner, My Heart's Been Doing Time. I like when they call back to old songs.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's a tough one. Angel's great. I'm going to have to give the nod to What It Takes. I just think the chorus, Jesus, is tough. They're both a 9.9 and a 9.91. It's Angel. Karen McFarlane, I love you. Next.
Nick?
You know, I was talking to Karen McFarlane backstage before.
I was talking to Karen McFarlane backstage before.
Buns up and kneeling.
I was a wheeling and dealing. My ace in the hole, so to speak.
I like, you know, the thing that always stood out to me is I like it. It almost seems like a brave move to put an accordion on there. It works really, the way that they use it during the chorus works really well. Mm. Really great touch. I'm going with Angel, however. In my opinion, up there with like Home Sweet Home is like the great power ballad of all time.
Wow.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge power ballad guy, but Angel every time.
I was just saying both of them start with a little drum. Drum.
That's
thing
true.
Too. Yeah, yeah. So is Angel yours?
Angel.
Okay, got it.
Angel as well. There was a period of my life, I bet you guys maybe were the same way, at least at some point, where you really probably didn't want to admit that you liked power ballads. Were you like, oh, that's stupid. I only like the fast songs where the guy's yelling the whole time. Maybe not for you guys, but that's how I felt. But as I got older, I could really appreciate power ballads and stuff that maybe I didn't think was as cool or for whatever bogus image I wanted to portray
love
myself.
Love is for suckers kind of a mentality.
Exactly. But both great. It's no surprise that after these two songs, Aerosmith just kept drilling in that direction of like, let's keep cranking out these ballads because we're awesome at this.
But they got wimpier and wimpier as they went along.
They did,
that's the problem.
But they stayed popular.
Dude,
for
they made
years,
huge hits from it.
Yeah.
But I got further and further away from these albums, even for me. And for a guy like Charlie, these albums were further and further away from the Toys in the Attic era. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, there's Dream On. That's these kind of songs are sort of the foundation of their
success. But you can't compare Dream On to I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Sure.
That's the epitome of just a shit, terrible,
just pandering
ballad.
Yeah.
But there's something we talk about on Pot of Thunder pretty often, and it's that sometimes people forget that this is a job for these people.
Right.
And it's like, well, if we just made all this money and we bought a boat, now we're part of boat culture.
And we really like
let's do it. Culture. Let's do it again because I liked making all that money but and it worked.
Sure,
and I feel like these two songs in a row, it's like, all right, we got two. Let's do one
that's
or two on every
point.
Album.
And Get a Grip had one on it as well. Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
You know,
amazing.
Amazing, right. Amazing was the third album closer of this giant ballad.
Yeah.
And I know even from our band, listen, I love our faster tunes than the heavier ones, but the ones that made us the money are the radio tunes. And they're great to play, but once in a while, I'm like, can we just get another, like, you know, Sin and Bones faster? And they're like, well, the producer doesn't want them. I'm like,
yeah.
That stupid producer that wants us to make money and have hits. Damn it.
Yeah.
Can we just do a thrash song just for me?
Yeah.
But I can kind of see that, you know, once you say, you know, they're making these. This is where Aerosmith became huge again. Yes, there's the Dude Looks Like a Ladies. Yes, there's the Fines. But it was the Angel, What It Takes, Amazings that really, or even Living on the Edge, that's a kind of a ballad too.
That's in there too.
That's what made them even bigger than they were was because of those type of tunes.
And remember, they're not 25 years old at that point either. Like right. I said, they got bills, they got families, they want to make money.
They lost everything in the 70s, so they basically have nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
So there you go.
So what did you choose?
I chose Angel.
Angel, gotcha.
But I like them both, but Angel wins.
Chris?
Yeah, I've never had any qualms about admitting that I'm a sucker for a great power ballad, and both of these fit the bill. There was a time when I would hear What It Takes in the late 80s and just sit there marveling at what a great song it is, lyrically everything. But I'm going to give the nod to Angel, that here comes my story of heartbreak I alluded to earlier. Again, very similar to what Chris over there related, which proof, speaking of related, proof that we are probably brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Write me into the will immediately. That's my request. You owe it to me.
Because he's going first.
Yeah, right. Into my will or into Ted's will? Because Ted's got a lot of debt.
Whatever. Your world. But no, I also know the name. Laurel Gray was the name of the young lady. I was in college at that time. Made a mixtape for her.
That's huge.
Of all ballads like this, Angel was on it. Broken Hearts by Living Color was on it.
Wow.
Sweetheart Like You, Bob Dylan was on it.
Damn.
Some other stuff didn't work. Didn't achieve the desired result.
Well, those are kind of brokenhearted songs to send her.
Yeah, but not necessarily. I mean, the title of the Living Color song doesn't necessarily reflect.
Maybe you should have went with Open Letter to a Landlord.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a fire.
Funny Vibe would have been another good one.
How so many people die. Yeah. Isn't this great, baby? Yeah,
that's another one. That's their Janie's Got a Gun. It's like, when I hear about like slumlords killing people, I don't know. But anyway, I put Angel was the centerpiece of a classic mixtape of ballads that I made for her. Got zero
ghosted
response.
You deserved zero
essentially
response.
That's what
but you know what the problem was, when you listed the mixtape, you actually pulled a Freudian slip and called it Angel Lingus.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, similar story, but Angel, that Mellotron line,
yes,
is awesome. And just when it boils right down to it, as I was listening to these songs again, Angel gave me the chills at times. Gave me the goosebumps.
There's that part, baby, 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 you're my. It's so good.
And then they cut in with that Mellotron.
It's a great brilliant melody line.
And the chord progression is just huge.
You know, it's funny. Once when I had Desmond on Talk Is Jericho, I went to Spotify and found a Desmond Child playlist with all of these songs on it. Like, if there was ever a guy that was just born to write memorable, amazing choruses.
Incredibly talented.
What else I like too about What It Takes is it's the end of the record. And so it fades out. There's a nice let go, let go, let go, which goes, and then it ends with like some other kind of accordion, and Steven Tyler does some like, thank you so much for listening to the record and we'll see you soon, or some like some Carnival Barker thing, right?
Yeah, I do like that he, and that seems to be, I'm just speculating, all Steven Tyler. Like,
of course.
Like getting, because he seems like so hyper, so the like so willing,
so Henny Youngman vaudevillian,
yeah,
rock
just
and
so
roll
willing
guy.
To like, okay, here's something that's like kitsch, but I'm gonna put it in there.
Steven
anyway.
Tyler,
late '80s Tyler Perry, if you will.
Steven Tyler and Dave Lee Roth are cut from the same cloth.
Oh yeah, absolutely,
you know, totally.
Yeah,
like you said, carnival barkers,
yeah,
showmen, MCs,
yeah, showmen, vaudevillian showmen
with the athleticism,
Catskill vaudevillians.
Oh, and something else I wanted to mention about '80s Aerosmith, and if you claim that you never had these thoughts, you're lying. So I don't want to hear your lies. Perry and Tyler, their nipple game was strong.
Huge.
In the 80s.
Huge.
I mean, perfect.
Huge.
Areolas. Yeah. The color was perfect.
Great, like,
incredible.
Bruce Lee muscle chest.
Exactly,
but it
right.
doesn't stick out at all.
See, he knows.
It's flat, but it's there.
Right.
Yeah. And look at, the nipple game. Like, I'm pumped.
Those guys were on the keto diet before it was, taking over the nation.
Keto spelled C-O-C-A-I-N-E.
Yeah, but there's nothing worse than an ugly nipple. They didn't have that.
They had great nipples.
Day. Yeah, they did.
Great
he
abs,
knows.
great great pecs.
Boy, did they recover from the depths of their heroin addiction.
They were still on all the yayo, which is the reason why the nipple game is good. Two great records here. It's one of those things, like, once again, when you listen to them through and kind of become reacquainted with them, which one, which do you like best? What's the favorite here? Who's the winner? Let's start with you, Nick.
It was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be.
And it always is, because you forget.
Because I went, I had consistently every once in a while popped in permanent vacation. Pump, not really. Some of the deeper cuts on Pump really impressed me. It's a much, much better album. I liked it a lot more than I remember liking it.
Yeah.
All that said, I'm going to go permanent vacation.
It just,
Yeah, I mean, and if you go by the numbers, I'm pretty sure I went with more choices off of that album. Mm-hmm. So it's just, plus, you know, and there's sentimental value. My first piece of rock music that I ever owned right here, this cassette. There's that
I love
as
the
well.
Fact that you pulled up this cassette because I had it too. And I remember I literally have not seen this picture of them in jail in 30 years.
Yeah.
Like literally, like that's so cool to see that. Cause as soon as I saw it, I'm like, I remember that picture, man. I don't remember the nipple game on Pump, but I remember them in jail.
Oh, I mean, look at that. Come on.
I mean, Whitford's even wearing a jail jumpsuit. Like he's super loaded, barely showed up for the photo shoot.
I heard his nipple game is unpredictable.
Bad nipple game.
At best. Yeah.
He was always told, wear a shirt.
Exactly. Inconsistent.
We don't know what that means. And wear a shirt, Whitford.
I do.
I do know what that means.
Chris?
And wear a shirt. Again, by the numbers and just overall preference, permanent vacation, it harkens more back to classic Aerosmith while keeping it modern. And then, you know, taking it as a whole, you can toss in the Beatles cover, which is great.
It is great, yeah.
The movie, I don't know what the hell that is.
I don't know why they probably signed a contract for 12 songs on the record.
I don't know
by the way, we didn't get to talk about it because it wasn't one, but I'm Down. It's a great Beatles rocker where Paul sings like Little Richard by design. So Tyler's basically doing Little Richard, which mm-hmm. his voice is very mm-hmm. similar. Mm-hmm. It's really good. It's worth checking out and definite, but great. It shouldn't have been a B-side. It should have been on the record, and it was.
Yep.
I go back to what you guys said. It's a lot closer than I thought, but listening to it, I'm going with Permanent Vacation. I thought Permanent Vacation was a runaway winner, but Pump was a lot closer than I thought. But Permanent Vacation wins like, well, I don't know, 6-4, maybe.
Is that what you had?
Yeah, so. It's close, but yeah.
And once again, as we always say, the classic album clash, both of these albums are great.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. They're classic albums. That's why they're here.
Yeah.
To me, it was the opposite. If you would have sat me down and said, do you want to put on Permanent Vacation or Pump? I probably went Permanent because Dude Looks Like a Lady is such a monster. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite of all the songs on the record. But I find that they're dirtier, slimier, and more riff-oriented on Pump. It's a little bit smoother on Permanent Vacation. Once again, I love it. But coming reacquainted with Fine, Elevator, I did pick Monkey, but Other Side, just those ones alone.
Mm-hmm.
The riffs are dirty. The groove is there. If you go back and listen, I might have even chose more songs on Permanent. But to me, Pump is the one that I would go to because of just it's a little dirtier and a little bit rougher. And I remember seeing that the band at that tour that was with Skid Row, and it was really killer. So great f-ing records, great band, and great stuff, guys. I'm glad you were able to come back and be on our show.
Yeah, thank you.
And the crazy thing is, I'm like, oh, this has been pretty short, like 45 minutes. We've been doing this for 90 minutes already.
Jeez.
It's time crazy.
Flies.
Great stuff. So thanks to all you guys, to Tyler Perry, if you're listening, Analingus are us. Laurel and Karen, we miss you, babes, and we don't want double bass in our Aerosmith and no social issues. Other than that, go over to Pod of Thunder and you can hear plenty of episodes with me on them, including
soon to be 11, maybe 12.
Who knows? Who knows?
We're gonna do one right now.
The number is increasing.
Usually by this time we're so loaded. Well, we're / me, but I'm not. I feel good. So
you're gonna fall off the ledge real quick. That's my
tune in.
Well, we actually have a balcony in this penthouse popper.
Really?
So don't let me fall off. No, I don't think we do. But great stuff, guys, and support Aerosmith, and we'll see you guys soon.